Hey guys, and welcome to the Animal Training Academy podcast show. I'm your host, Ryan Cartledge, and I'm really excited that you have decided to take time out of your busy schedules to come and hang out today. We're really grateful for you tuning in. And if you have been listening to the podcast for a while, we really appreciate this. Thank you so much. Hopefully you have subscribed so that you never miss an episode. But if not, or if you are new to the show, get yourself over to iTunes, Stitcher, animaltrainingacademy.com, or whatever it is you're listening to this podcast on, and hit the subscribe button to make sure you don't miss a single episode. We are bringing you today's episode on behalf of the Animal Training Academy, or ATA, membership. If you like the conversations in these podcasts, then I want to invite you to continue them with like-minded people within the ATA membership area, which you can find out more about over on the ATA website. Within the membership, you can get access to twice monthly live web classes, the back catalogue of previous web classes, plus a huge library of videos and projects to problem solve different training situations. And we're a sociable bunch with an exclusive private Facebook group, forums area, and WhatsApp chat groups. It's like a Netflix social media platform for animal behaviour nerds. Well, we will get started on today's episode, where I'm very excited to welcome a previous guest back to the show who originally joined us in November 2017. And since that time has had a huge influence on both my understanding of what we do and the practical application as well. One of my favourite behaviour nerds of all time, Ava Bertelsen. Ava has a master's degree in behaviour analysis and a passion for all things related to behaviour, learning and animal welfare. Together with business partner Emily Johnson-Vay, Ava runs their collaboration Carpe Momentum, teaching seminars on the general principles of behaviour and learning and coaching trainers in the art of structuring great training sessions, regardless of the venue or the species. Ava is a board member of the Swedish Association for Behaviour Analysis, a faculty member of Clicker Expo, and an enthusiastic disseminator of ethical practices based in behavioural science. In addition to her own teaching, she also has been instrumental in introducing Tag Teach and Fear Free, as well as numerous renowned speakers to the Scandinavian audience. So without further ado, it's my very great pleasure to welcome back Ava Bertelsen to the show today, who's patiently waiting by. Ava, welcome back.
Hi, Ryan. Thank you so much for having me back.
For those listeners who haven't checked out the membership yet, Ava is a very crucial component of our community and content contributor within our membership area as well, which we really appreciate. So everyone listening, I'm going to direct you back to where Ava and I connected for the first time in episode 46 of the ATA podcast show. So we're up to nearly episode 90 now, so about halfway through. It's exciting to do this at this mark in the show's history. But in that episode, you can learn a little bit more about who Ava is and her backstory. And I'll link to this in the show notes for everyone to make it nice and easy. Because today we're going to talk about three words. Words that make up the title of a conference Ava and her colleagues started running in Sweden in 2017. I got that correct, didn't I? That was when the first...
Oh, yeah, it was actually January 2018 it ended up being, yeah.
So in January 2018, and then that, the title of that event and these three words we're going to talk about today are choice, control, and communication, three C's. Ava, how about we start off with you, please, telling everyone listening a little bit about what this event is, the Choice, Control, and Communication event, how it got started, and why is it important to you?
Oh, this is an event that has been, it had been planned and it had been talked about for several years before. It actually started with me, Mally from Denmark, and Tess from Norway, sitting at a Clicker Expo, one of those late nights, and discussing what we would love to see more of in Scandinavia. And conferences was one thing, just love being at a conference, being with like-minded people, talking about the subjects that are near and dear to us, and just getting to nerd out, both listening to lectures and then having the discussions in the evening. And we were talking about what were the topics that we were really the most interested in and choice, control. There are a lot of words that start with C. Choice, control, communication, compassion, contingency. There are a lot of beautiful and interesting words there. And then, so we discussed it and we've like, oh, we would love to do this. I wonder how, I wonder when. And then putting together a conference is like a big deal. So it didn't just happen overnight. But then I found myself working within our regional government and having the possibility to organize things through them. And that's why how it came about the first time was I was in a position where I could have some of my work time dedicated to organize this conference. And doing it with Scandinavian speakers. Because what we found was that we see each other on other people's conferences. Some of us might be talking, some of us might be in the audience. We have a great, great crowd of speakers right in our backyard. But our Scandinavian audience might not even know of their own speakers sometimes. And we also wanted to bring some bits and pieces of the rest of the world back to Scandinavia and put together something with Scandinavian speakers that would be really interesting for people from the rest of Europe and the rest of the world to come to as well. So that's how the conference organizing part sort of got started. The topics of choice and control and communication were just what was most inspiring to all of us, what we felt most passionate about, what also felt like the most current in our animal training community. So we had a group of speakers that really were passionate about this subject and really knowledgeable about the subject, and also a subject that we really wanted to bring people together talking about.
So I feel like you're the queen of, and I haven't even been at one with you, those late night discussions at these events being events like Clicker Expo, Wolf. And the reason I say that is because of social media and pictures of you asleep on couches because you just haven't gone to bed. I mean, this event seemingly stemmed from one of those conversations. Can you explain how you feel? How does Ava feel about these conversations that happen at these events? Why are they important, and what they mean for you? Share a little bit about your passion there.
Oh my goodness, where do I start? I'm sort of lost for words about. It's hugely important to me. It's super valuable both for the content, for the company, for the fun, for getting to really geek out without risking going. It's like that one time where you can be as nerdy and as intense in discussions as you like. And if the people who stay up in around that table will want to be in that discussion. If you're at a conference, you can always go somewhere else. If you want to take a break, you can step to another table. If I want to dive into a discussion, I can step into that table. So it's like one of those, I just love the conferences just in general. And for those discussions, you have hundreds and hundreds of nerdy people that you are surrounded with. And a few of them will be eager to stay up late at night and just twist and turn the subjects. I guess it all goes very much back to, I'm going to refer back to me and Emily 20 years ago. This is how we got started. We were doing, that wasn't conferences. That was us staying up late at night at agility competitions. And that was just the two of us because nobody else could pretty much stand our level of discussion or the intensity or the nerdiness about it. And this, me getting to do that at conferences now, that's just taking that to a more global level with the most amazing people. So yeah, it's really important to me.
It's like you need another conference after the conference called the discussion conference.
And yes, totally. So that's why we do that. Stay.
And so you were sitting there with Tess and Marley, is it? Have I got those names
yes.
correct? And you were talking about the most current trends is not the right word, the most current topics of discussion.
Yeah.
And then it just was a coincidence that they all started with C.
Yeah, they sort of. Yes. Because all the important words that we could think of were, yeah. Choice and control were a bit obvious. You know, that was like that pair of words that are circling in our ether a lot. And then from Peggy and Emily and myself doing the Animals in Control talk. Communication is one of my sort of passion topics coming from that. But we had, we were pretty early finding that something CCC, that sounds like a name of a conference, doesn't it? CCC. And then it was just a matter of choosing which of all the C's that would belong there.
And that's Peggy Hogan you're talking about, isn't it?
Yes, that's Peggy Hogan.
And I like this idea, and it's making me think about this idea being the idea of realising the talent in your own backyard, and making me think we need to do that more in New Zealand. Is this something that you're seeing around the world isn't happening as much, that people aren't really going, hey, look at what we have here, we're all reaching out internationally?
I think so, yeah. I think that's, I guess, from what I see, not now. Remember, I know my own backyard. I don't know what everybody else's backyard is like, but I'm guessing that people are pretty prone to traveling and pretty prone to going to events when you bring in somebody from far away, but may not recognize what you have nearby.
I think it's probably a lot of nodding heads around the planet at the moment. So putting together conferences, as you said, a pretty big deal. But you ran the one in January 2018, and it was so reinforcing, you've decided to do it again.
Yes.
So we're gonna jump in soon and unpack these words, and it's where we thought we would take this conversation today. It could go anywhere, but that's where we're going to start. But maybe before we do, let's give the listeners a little bit of information, especially the people in your region, about the CCC conference 2019. What is it? Where is it? How can people get involved?
So the location is on the west coast of Sweden, just 40 minutes north of Gothenburg. It's in a little village called Ljungskile, which is where I live. So we have a school and conference place just a couple of hundred meters away from the railway station. So it's fun because this is where I grew up. I'm really getting to host this conference literally in my own backyard. And it's a beautiful facility. There is housing. There is accommodation on site. So we can just hang out there, and it's close to the forest. You can go for a walk in the woods if you want to continue the discussions on foot. It's going to be November. So November 16, 17. We actually start on Friday night. The format is the same as last time. So Friday night, those people that can and want to come already on Friday night can do that. If you can't come until the Saturday morning, you can register in the morning as well. And then we do lectures and discussions all day, Saturday through Sunday. And we also will have a pizza night and a special guest speaker on the Saturday night. So there will be activities going on nonstop.
And can you announce some of the subject matter experts that people will be seeing lectures and presentations from?
So it's a long list. I had to write it down next to me just to make sure I don't forget anybody, because we have a lot of people that were part of this last year. So some of the people that the ATA community might be familiar with or will be familiar with would be Carolina Westlund, Stephanie Edlund, my colleague Emily, and myself. And then we have our only non-Scandinavian or honorary Scandinavian from last year, and that is Kerry Kish, who amazingly registered for the conference coming all the way from the US to be an attendee. And I was like, oh my goodness, Kerry, are you coming? Would you speak? Could you do a little extra? So we decided to go move away from the all Scandinavian and have a special guest for the Saturday night last year. So this year, Kerry is our honorary Scandinavian and will be part of the daytime presenters.
Also familiar to the ATA community, but new to the CCC conference, is Anette Pedersen from Copenhagen Zoo. Really happy that she's joining us this year. Another new person for us, also from Denmark, Katja Pedersen, Connie's instructor, brilliant clicker trainer. She will be joining Emily Johnson-Vaig and talk about cooperative care for kids. Who else do we have? Oh, we have Tess Angren, Norway, Tag Teach, using procedures where the learner really is in control when the learner is a kid who is afraid of dogs. That's a talk that was presented last year, and We all loved it so much that we wanted to do the same talk again this year. We also have from Sweden, part of the organizing committee last year, Carolina Fransson, horse trainer, will be talking about labels, actually, one of our favorite topics. We have Anne-Louise Ryrvik, clicker trainer, working with many different species, brilliant at shaping. And we have a psychologist. He was with us last year as well, Anders Wiberg. He's a behavior analyst and will be talking about something on the topic of how us as animal trainers could contribute in the human world, even more than what we do already.
And we have from Gothenburg, Emily de Bussard. She's an ethologist and she had a presentation on nudging and other things related to that, choice in people last year. So she will have some special missions this year. Emily and Katja, by the way, will be talking about cooperative care for kids.
There's a few more C's there. Cooperative care for kids, spelled a C. Awesome.
And then we have our Saturday night guest speaker. That was finished just the other day. So that will also be from outside Scandinavia. Really honored to have Chirag Patel come.
Ah, nice.
For the Saturday night.
How exciting.
Yes.
Awesome. So a lot of those names you just heard, listeners of the show, you can go back and listen to podcasts with Carrie, with Carolina, with Stephanie, with Chirag, and future podcasts with all the other ones, because if they're amazing in Ava's eyes, then they have to be on the ATA podcast show at some point. We will get there. We're nearly reaching episode 100.
Oh my goodness, and I forgot my last year's co-host. There are too many people in here. Oh my goodness. We also, of course, have Carolina Fransson, absolutely amazing horse clicker trainer and fellow behavior analysis nerd. We are part of running the behavior analysis animal training group together.
Awesome. Doesn't get much better than that. We will have major FOMO watching here from this side of the planet while it's going on.
Well, you'll have to get over here. It's not that far. We just decided it's not that far.
No, especially with these planes that apparently go into space. Be over there in a couple of hours. And watch out for CCC streaming live in 2021. Just throwing that in there. Hey,
you'll have to help me figure out the technology for that one.
Yeah, there's a few good Ryans on this planet. Ryan being the other one.
There are.
Who can assist with those types of things. But let's get geeky and unpack some of these words. So I was really lucky 2 weeks ago, or 3 weeks ago, I've lost track of all dates and times recently, to attend a week with Susan Freeman and Peter Clark in Australia. And Susan did a presentation on choice and control and really got me thinking more about these words that get tied together a lot, and potentially their meanings get intertwined. Depending on who you talk to, because they are just labels. They are just words that don't describe a behavior. But I'm excited about this. Let's unpack these two words, choice and control. Can you describe for the listeners of the show what those words mean to you and how your thinking has evolved on them since we talked about them last in November 2017, with all of the sleepless nights you've had at Clicker Expos and Wolf conferences around the world? And what do those two words look like?
So, I'm almost hesitating to begin to answer because I'm thinking of sort of from which angle to tackle that question. Because we could start at just, this is what these words mean to me. This is how, but then I'd have to go one step more back and think, what does it mean that words even have meaning to me? And so when I say what those words means to me, I'd just like to say right away that where I have learned to use them is what I'm going to talk about. I'm not sure if it's even proper to say that words have a meaning, but I have learned to use them in certain circumstances. And the way I have learned and the circumstance where I currently use the word choice would be where an individual is in a situation with several concurrent contingencies, so several possible behaviors, several possible reinforcers, several possible antecedent arrangements are available at the same time, and where that individual has history of behaving in one way or the other. And then they have both these options available at the same time. And then the behavior of choosing would be doing one thing or the other. And it requires experience. It's not relevant to talk about somebody choosing if they don't have more than one option available, or if they don't have experience with doing the one behavior and experiencing the consequence of that versus doing the other behavior and experiencing the consequence for that one. So that would be choice, or choosing, the behavior of choosing an option for me.
So they need more than one option, and they need experience with the contingencies of both of those options. Let's go back to where you started. Where we started going, because I don't think we unpacked this well enough, and I'm a little bit unsure what you mean. So I'm sure the listeners of the show, at least some of them, it might just be me, are going to be in the same boat. But when you say, and I'm going to butcher this, but paraphrasing you said it's potentially not even okay to say words have meaning. What?
I mean, operationalize that. Meaning, that's just another label. It's going to be very much Chirag Patel on this one. It's just a label. So when we say a word has a meaning, it's not as in if the word is a thing. The word is something I do. It's a behavior, me saying it. That's me doing something. The word, yeah, we can say, if I write it down, I can write choice on a piece of paper, but that's just ink on a piece of paper. The word isn't a thing in itself. And that's going to be a paraphrasing Joe Lang saying, it's not a thing, but it's not a nothing either. So words, when I use them, that's behavior. That's me doing something. So saying that a word has meaning, it works in everyday life. I say that all the time. Obviously, I said it now 10 times, the word has a meaning, or can we talk about words having meaning? But I think it's important to sort of step all the way back to looking at our verbal behavior as behavior and start unpacking those labels all the way back there, all the way back to recognizing that when we say, oh, it's just a label, that's if we're going to back that up all the way to how we use words, then we need to start looking at our use of words as behavior, as us doing something.
So words have contingencies attached to them, which we've been reinforced or punished for in the past. So we have a choice of what words we can use and all of the different words that we could select to try to explain to someone our internal thought processes have contingencies attached to them. So then the word choice might get thrown around as a popular word, but it might have lots of different meanings for people, but people might be saying it because of the reaction they get from other trainers when they say it.
Yeah. And when we say they have different meaning for different people, what we might mean is that people use them for under different conditions or in different situations. So if I look at a video clip and then I say, oh, I see somebody choosing here, or I see somebody making a nice choice. If somebody else is looking at the same video and saying, oh, he's not really choosing, he's just doing the only thing available to him. We can see different things in the same video clip. If a few of us say, oh, that looks like choice, that looks like somebody choosing to the same video clip, then that video clip is functioning as a cue for us to say that is choice. That's what we call choice. So when we say it has meaning, it means that we refer to the same thing, or that our behavior of saying choosing or choice is under the same stimulus control. Does that make sense? Sort of?
Probably. My mind was racing with so many different thoughts.
It's so difficult. I find it so difficult to unravel how to like reasonably talk about our talking, our words, because it's not how we usually use them. We don't have a lot of training history for figuring out how on earth do we talk about our verbal behavior as behavior. How do we talk about words from our own words from a behavioral point of view? And I probably need to go back and read Skinner's verbal behavior 10 more times to get some more inspiration of how to reasonably talk about it. Because we wouldn't say that my dog's barking has meaning. What does she mean? Then we can operationalize it just fine. What's the stimulus control and what's the reinforcer for her barking?
So some people, and my mind went there, some people being me, might go, my learning history with the word meaning. So to say, we wouldn't say our dog's behavior has meaning. My mind finds words that are similar to that and goes to the space, would we say our dog's barking has function?
Yes. And by that we mean what? What
does it mean to say that it has function? For using the word function.
Yes. It gets so simplistic. We have been reinforced for using those words under those conditions. It just comes all the way back to that.
Right. So I run Animal Training Academy. I interact with people like yourself on a daily basis and have these kinds of conversations. A component of Animal Training Academy hasn't traditionally been consulting and working directly with pet owners. So I find myself in the context of working with a pet owner trying to describe behavior to them and why their dog is barking when they're not home and how we get this to, within the frame of what they're asking me, stop their behavior. I don't really have a reinforcement history. I don't have many choices there, you could say, because I don't have a rich experience base in that context of the contingencies available for using the words that I normally use in conversation with the people like yourself. Is that
so true?
Is that an example of kind of what we're talking about?
Yeah, I think it is. I think it is that we need wide repertoires of words to use under different circumstances. Because our words are gonna affect our listener differently, depending on who that listener is and what that listener's history is.
So would you say in that context, I don't have choice? Because I know words, but I don't have experience with the contingencies. I don't potentially have the necessary experience with the contingencies of using different words in those contexts. So would you say I don't have choice, if the definition of choice?
Ooh, I would probably say your choices are limited, your choices are few. And I would be very interested to see what might your choices be. That is, what would some different behaviors that are in your history that could be applied there, what might them be? That's another thing. In when I think of how I personally tend to use the word choice, is I usually don't talk that much about it as little choice or much choice, no choice, all the choice. I don't tend to do that much, but I tend to be interested in and looking for and asking about what are the options available. That would be what reinforcers are available, might be available in that situation, and what is your history. And it's interesting if we discuss it. I mean, if we talk about, look at a video of you doing this consultation, and we look at what were your choices at that moment, like realistically for you when that happened, there might be a few different ones. Maybe we can think of, just say a number, say 5 different choices, things that were really realistically available to you based on your history in that second. But if we then discuss it afterwards on a more sort of theoretical level, we can list many more choices, because then we can also list the ones that we can come up with in conversation that might not be in your personal background, but that can be, we can put them in there by talking about them so that they will be added choices or added options for you the next time you're in the same situation. That's a cool thing that we can do with our human talking.
Does that mean that I then have different choices, even if I don't have a learning history, going from a previously offered definition?
I would say we just gave you a different learning history by talking about it, and that you then have more choices.
So we've talked a bit. So I have kind of logical reasoning behind the contingencies available to me.
Yeah.
As opposed to actually experience.
Yeah, that's where I think the verbal behavior, behavior analysis geeks would say that you will have some rule-governed behavior, not just the contingency-shaped behavior that from your own experience, but also some rule-governed behavior, which would be sort of vicariously learned through talking about it or through observing somebody else. I'm not the specialist on the terminology here, but I think that's how that would be talked about. So yes, our conversation will definitely be part of your added learning history.
Okay, and then you said, I'm holding myself back of going down that rabbit hole of saying, Ava, what do you mean rule-governed behavior? Let's stay.
Yeah, it's just a term. It's a term that, from my understanding, that term is used as sort of opposite or as the other possibility to contingency-shaped behavior. It's still, I'm not thrilled about the term. I've sat through some, when I did my master's studies, I sat through listening to some talk about rule-governed behavior, and the term of it didn't really resonate with me. So I had to struggle some to understand what it meant. But just you can behave for consequences that you haven't experienced yourself, because somebody has shown you a picture, a warning label or something. And it's not really true to say that you behave for consequences, but you getting that information, you seeing pictures or talking to somebody, will affect your future behavior in a similar fashion as if you had the experience yourself. It's just you'd never actually had the experience of getting your hand trapped in that machine, but you have seen a picture of a hand trapped in that machine, and that alters your future behavior. And then rule governed is a term that's used in circumstances like that. We'll have to get a verbal behavior specialist on board to tease that out properly.
Yeah, I've never thought about that before, so excited about that possibility. So it's like you can hypothesize what the contingency is, so you modify your behavior based on that.
Yeah, and whether hypothesizing is a thing or whatever it is you do, just what we can definitely say that is that you saw that sign, and after seeing the sign or after having that conversation, your behavior was different compared to what it was before.
So rule-governed behavior, you were not thrilled with the combination of words, but you have a learning history with those words, and you had a choice earlier in this podcast to use them or not. And you chose to use them.
Yes.
Which demonstrates there's some reinforcement there.
Yes. So in the question of what about if I didn't experience this myself, but my behavior is still altered, I do have a learning history of those words, contingency shaped versus rule governed, being words that are connected to contingency shaped, the history where the learner has experienced the consequence and learned directly from it in their environment, of putting your hand on a hot plate and getting burned, and then, or opening the fridge and finding food. And then rule governed being a term that has been used for when they have been talking about it or seen a sign or listened to a lecture, and then altering their behavior in a way that sort of matches the instructions rather than having their own learning history. And then what I don't like about it is, you even hear it when I say it, saying they don't have their own learning history. They do have a learning history. They have the learning history of looking at it or of listening to it. It's just a different one, different type of learning history.
So let's get out of this rabbit hole. Let's get back a little bit. So you're saying with choice, you don't like to think of it as little choice or no choice or lots of choice. You like to think of it as, I made some notes here. What are the choices, and what is the learning here, and how is this learner going to implement that learning in this situation with the information it has?
And what are the available contingencies? Like today, I was at our fabulous local shelter, cat shelter, with a veterinary friend, and we were doing some training with the cats, and then we helped out with some more urgent situations, including a rabbit that needed to have, you call it subcutaneous, like under the skin, fluid in the neck. And in that particular scenario, the options of what that rabbit could do were very limited. So what were the rabbit's choices, or what were the available options, or what were the possible contingencies available? There weren't that many. There were sitting still or struggling to get out of a towel. There were moving toward stroking on the head or moving away from stroking on the head. But there weren't I couldn't easily make a long list because she was still, and it was didn't seem to be a super stressful event, but there weren't that many. So in that scenario, I could say there were a few, but I could also sort of say which ones were they, and I think that's more relevant. It was the choice of staying still or moving, and then the sensory inputs of hands over a towel, meaning that there wasn't physically that much sort of wiggle room or room for movement. And then I can fast forward to myself having dinner, and there were lots of different plates on the table. So, and they were all within reach for me, and there were nobody, I had no history of anybody stopping me from having any of the food on those delicious plates. It was also no learning history of any aversive. If I were to leave the table, there were options, meaning available reinforcers for talking to people or for just sitting quiet or for feeding my dog. There were, like, I could easily list many options, but I can also list that they were sort of nice options. They were reinforcing, positively reinforcing options, most of them. And I think it's more important for me to say which the options are rather than, because there can be many options and they can all be aversive. There can still be a lot of choice in quantity, but they might all be aversive, and that's not a nice scenario to be in.
Gotcha. I think, pretty sure. So that's choice, and there's 12 rabbit holes. So in the interest of time, let's continue to jump out of one and jump in another. The word that gets paired with choice a lot is control.
Yeah.
And without going all meta on what does control and the word control and the use of the word control mean, can you do the same? Can you unpack control for us in much the same way you just unpacked the word choice?
So exemplify control and sort of describe a control contingency would be behaving for reinforcement and having the experience of given this antecedent condition, this behavior gives that reinforcer. So it ties very tightly in with the word or the label of predictability, a predictable sequence of ABC, a predictable contingency. So pressing a lever, getting food, or scratching the water bowl, I come fill it up with water, or wiggling and getting away. So the control part, if we take the rabbit that we needed to restrain, the control part, I would say, was very limited. There, I would say I would be more inclined to say there can be little control or a lot of control in a situation. I would be more interested, I think, in quantifying that. I hadn't thought of that before, that I'm interested in quantifying control more than choice. But that behaving for outcome or a history in a situation of actually accessing relevant reinforcers. If behavior can access relevant reinforcers, we tend to label that control. If behavior doesn't access relevant reinforcers, you struggle and struggle, but you still can't get away from there. Or you work and work to figure out how to get that treat, but you don't get it. Or you get it without it being contingent upon a certain response. And the next time you do the same thing, you don't get that treat. That's low level of control.
So behaving for reinforcement, and given this antecedent condition, this behavior gets, or this BC contingency is now available. And that being,
yes,
that being consistent, and once again, these are all just words, so doing our best here to predict. They are set up, or they're made available in ways that are predictable for the animal, and the consequence is kept at the highest consistency possible for that animal.
Yeah.
So just trying to think of some examples. So with a dog, maybe it's showing the dog the harness. Just thinking about my own personal journey with Phoebe, and mm-hmm. her being able to say, "I don't want the harness to come on," means the harness doesn't go on. Versus, "Well, I'm sorry, we need to go for a walk. The harness goes on anyway." Because that doesn't become predictable. Or does that become predictable for Phoebe?
It's predictable, but she cannot access the relevant reinforcer.
Of space and proximity from the harness.
Yeah. So there is the motivation, the MO, saying that getting away from the harness might be a function as reinforcer, but that's not available. If you give that warning signal saying this is coming on now, you don't have choice or you cannot move away. And I also think that's why we sort of tend to go with choice and control together, because if we take away a lot of the options, if we take away options which would have to do with choice, then we might also end up taking away control in the sense of reinforcers being available through behavior.
Mm-hmm. So, by the way, Phoebe puts the harness on now. Oh.
I know she does. It's beautiful.
Through her own control and our two-way communication, it's very predictable what happens, and she chooses to participate in behaviours that facilitate cooperatively putting on the harness through the help of Ava Bertelsen and teaching me all about start buttons and implementing those with Phoebe. So here's another example then. Animal in zoological setting being used for education, and people coming in to ask this animal to come out and participate in the educational activities. And the animal, if the animal says no, there's lots of different people working with this animal. So sometimes the animal says no and it gets left in there. Sometimes the animal says no and it gets taken out anyway. Can we say that this animal is losing... I'm being careful how I say this. Is one way we could potentially phrase this, is this animal is losing control because it's becoming unpredictable for that animal. It's like, this is the contents. If I behave this way, this might happen. Is that like a lack of control?
Yes, to me, that would be it would be reasonable to say that's lack of control. When we say the animal is saying no, what we mean by that being the animal behaving for the consequence or with a past history of the consequence of getting away or not getting picked up, and then randomly from the animal's perspective, sometimes that behavior leads to the reinforcer of getting to stay in its area, and other times it doesn't. So that means that the animal doesn't access the reinforcer.
And so choice being different learned BC contingencies in the same environmental context, is that an accurate description based on our conversation so far?
Yeah.
So
the behavior of choosing.
So the animal might have choice in that context, but no control.
I do agree that the labels choice and control are different. They don't refer to the exact same thing, but I do think that they very often are relevant to use in sort of the same context. So when we say, oh, we want to give this this animal more choice and more control in its environment, what we often refer to would be that we want several contingencies available, meaning if we go in there and offer to come out, both the contingency of coming out and the contingency of staying in are available at the same time through the animal's behavior. That would be the choice. And that through behaving, the animal can access one or the other, meaning being in control of its outcome. So they will happen at the same time. Both will be relevant at the same time. It's tricky to think of a situation with many positively reinforcing choices and no control, I think. And it's also difficult to think of control over positively reinforcing outcome without the choice to do it or not, both the options of doing it or not doing it available. So it's as if they are somehow tied together still.
And is that why they use so much together, or do you think that there is confusion around there actually being a different meaning for those two words, or both, or something else?
I think for me personally, if I try not to overthink it and get into how we use the words, or just how do I see them being used in the animal training community, I don't see any huge fallout from this, the choice and control combined label, because the actions I see people doing would be providing positive reinforcement, providing contingencies that are predictable, providing several contingencies at the same time, and making sure that the learners get some history with those contingencies. And I think that when I look around and see how the terms are being used. Like what do people do when they say, oh, I have tried to increase choice and control here? I see, I generally see nice training happening, nice environmental setup, nice, like for me, highly reinforcing training to look at most of the time. So then when we talk about the words, there might be a lot of confusion or a lot of difficulties and a lot of differences perhaps in how we talk about them. But if I look at the training being done under those labels, I see it sort of going in the same direction.
And brings us to something else we wanted to talk about today. We're going to go back to the choice, control, and communication and unpack. Now I'm wanting to change the word unpack. We're going to look at the word communication. You said we talked just saying there the outcome of people implementing whatever it is that they label as choice and control is good things for animals and trainers is what we're seeing. We also you have been very kindly sharing lots of Animal Training Academy podcasts recently and doing a little bit of a binge, which is really exciting. And you said to me, you've noticed there's been a lot of conversations about unpacking labels on the Animal Training Academy podcast show. And so you wanted to add a little bit of input today about why you thought it is important to have these conversations. Have I remembered our previous conversation correctly? You wanted to talk about why you think it is important to have these conversations about unpacking these words. Feel free to change the word unpack. And at the same time, share some appreciation for everyone listening, the trickiness surrounding this, especially when talking with others.
Yeah, I think that's sort of apparent to everybody listening to this up until now, of us hesitating while we talk. I think we've never talked this slowly ever, because there are a lot of gaps in our talking, because we're thinking and turning around the words and trying to sort of get the best term out into the air. So it's definitely difficult and important at the same time. Me coming home after 3 amazing months on the road, traveling and geeking out, and then coming home, listening to those ATA podcasts has been especially highly reinforcing due to the level of nerdiness deprivation. Although I have a bunch of nerds at home, it's not hundreds of them right at breakfast. So listening to those conversations and hearing how elegantly people are talking with minimal use of labels, or with the podcast you did with Lindsay just the other day about talking about emotions and how her journey of altering a lot of the verbal behavior that goes with that. And I'm just amazed that of the journey we are on in trying to be more clear and more precise in our language. And I really, for me, that's a big part of how I got into studying behavior in the first place a very long time ago, and of what I love about our clicker training community in trying to just describe what it is that we see rather than adding labels to it. Just do the observations, collect the data, look at what's in front of you rather than the made up picture coming from a word. So I do find it super important, and I do find it still difficult and still evolving. I've been on this journey for, it feels like, 20 years, and my behavior analysis, like the super nerdy part of the journey, for 10 years now. And really, I need to be in conversations with other people who are much better than me at using the terminology fluently and talking with minimal use of labels, because it's difficult. And then I need to go back and be there to use the labels when they are useful in everyday life. And I'm always bouncing back and forth, and I'm more and more comfortable in doing it. The better I get at unpacking the labels, the better I get at describing for myself exactly what it is that we're talking about, the more relaxed I can be about using the labels, because I know that I can just take a step back and say, by that I mean, under these circumstances, this behavior for these reinforcers or something like that.
I really like that. One of the takeaways from Susan Freeman's and Peter Clark's workshops from a few weeks ago was that I do need to more clearly define choice and control in my own mind so that I can communicate with others effectively about it. And I was with people that are much more fluent than me and doing that, being around Susan, Peter, and the 200 other delegates that were at that event. So we've demonstrated some behavior with learning history in this podcast by pausing before we unpack some of the words.
Yes.
But what you just said really resonated with me, because you know, one reason I was excited about this podcast was following on from those workshops is having this opportunity to talk with someone like yourself, who I believe has better fluency than me in some things, and I'm sure you know there's other areas that a little bit different than that. But so I'm doing that right now with you, and appreciate that, and I think the podcast audience is as well. So two things there maybe as we get better at, or we continue the conversation, I should say, carefully choosing my words around how to communicate with each other and think about the stuff ourselves, maybe pausing, slowing down. And that's something I've learned doing this podcast. You don't have to talk so fast. Maybe the slow talk. Okay, I'm putting the audience to sleep now. But slowing down, pausing, thinking, and then getting practice at just defining these words yourself, because I find that builds a lot of confidence for me when I actually have to physically make a workshop or do a podcast and we geek out. When I actually go to talk to someone about it, I'm much more confident.
I have during our last Clicker Expo, I increased my use of the recording device on my phone by about, 1,000% or something like that. I used it a lot, and I used it many times for just recording myself saying something so that I would remember it 5 seconds later. Because there were so many times in the discussions and I'm like, okay, I get this now. I think this is it. Wait, I have to record it because I'm not going to remember what I just said. That happened again and again and again. So it's not just that a thought has passed your mind once and now you have access to those words. You can use those words. You need to allow yourself to practice them. So I would frequently just be annoying and ask people, oh, wait, could you say that again, please? I have to record it. So I have so many hours of recordings, and many of them are repeat. Oh, please say that again. How did you say that? In which order did you say that words? Those are the occasions under which that behavior will occur. Oh, wow, is that how you said it? All the terms and all those, how the words sort of fall. So recognizing that it takes practice, recognizing that it's not something that comes from within, that I now have this understanding within me. It's practice. It's words that come in a certain order. And if I can practice them, and if I can do them, I can use slightly different words in the same situation, and then I can alter them some more. And then I will feel like I will refer to it as if I understand or I'm fluent at it.
I will refer to it as if I understand. It's going to be my favorite saying. Well, Ryan, you really understand it. You really understand this topic. No, I don't. I'm just referring to it as if I understand.
I am saying the words. Using is also, there are so many labels. What do you mean by using? Saying the words. Understanding under the conditions of yada yada yada. It just gets so boring listening to. So we sometimes just have to bounce back to, okay, let me have a fluid conversation. Never mind if there are 1,000 labels in it that I haven't defined. But most of our lives we spend doing just that, just using words as we have learned to use them in the circumstances where we have learned to use them, without actually going back and looking at exactly what is it that we're talking about here. What under which conditions are we using these words? What's the reinforcement history for using them? What's the stimulus control that's most important for when we use them? So whenever we argue about, what does this mean or what does that mean? What's the stimulus control under which we use it? And is it the same, or are we using them under completely different stimulus control? That's when we have the arguments.
Okay, jumping past this rabbit hole. Communication is the last word. I feel like with the conversation we've had, we don't need to spend as long on this.
I have an easy way out for communication for you. Would you like
go.
It?
Go. I do. At the 1 hour and 5 minute mark, yes.
So that would be, let's take what we said about control and let's put two individuals in there. Let's also say take what we said about choice and put two individuals or more individuals in there. As soon as we have several individuals and they are functioning as antecedents and as consequences for each other's behavior, that's communication.
Awesome. So, the conversation got, I'm going to use based on my learning history, but not fluent use of the word meta. We got really meta on all of us today. And when people are making a decision or attending choice, control, and communication conference, what does that even mean? Is this the kind of journey that they're going to go on with the presentations that they're going to see? Is it this kind of exploration of...
It will be exploration, but very practical such exploration. There will be... So we have a couple of more C's that are sort of involved in this, cooperative care being a couple of them, since that's another really hot and interesting topic. So we're focusing in a little bit on that. So there will be practical examples from a variety of venues, from the zoo, from the vet clinic, from working with your own kids or with other human individuals that may have an issue of similar type that we can see in as the animals that are afraid at the vet. You can have a person having a fear of dogs or spiders, for example. We will have presentations of basics on behavior management and working with our animals, and so more the practical aspects of how can we apply those concepts that we refer to as choice and control and communication. How can we apply them in a variety of settings? But we will do that while sort of referring back to what does that look like? What do we mean? How do we, why would we say that this is a good idea and that is a less good idea, for example? So it will be under the umbrella of the terms choice, control, communication, but looking at practical aspects and elegant solutions and reasoning behind how do our different implementations work? What works? What doesn't work? If we do this, what can we expect happen? We will have the topic of referring to some research and see what research is out there when it comes to animals in veterinary care situations, for example, and how can we understand that research. So pretty practical, but on a geeky level.
All right, we're just going to pause the podcast for a second just while I book my plane tickets to Sweden, because that sounds freaking amazing. Elegant solutions. I mean, come on, that's a beautiful word sandwich just there. Hey, once again, thank you so much for sharing everything today, Ava. Just before we do officially wrap up, I know we mentioned this towards the start of the episode, but could you just remind everyone listening where they can go to find out more about you, CCC, and get in touch?
So to find the conference and there through also find me, you go to ccc2019.com. You can also find me on carpemomentum.nu. And for more geeky stuff on the subject of subjects of choice and control and communication, you can also check out the website that Emily and I and Peggy put together. That's on animalsincontrol.com.
Amazing. And we will link to all of this stuff in the show notes, everyone, so you can easily find that, as well as to Ava's previous appearance on the ATA podcast show, where there's a beautiful, elegant solution with a giraffe. And Ava implementing some of the stuff we've been talking about today. So we'll link all of that so you can go check that out. This has been so much fun, Ava, from myself. I feel like I'm at 3 a.m. in the morning at a Clicker Expo, too wired and tired to go to bed.
Yes, hopefully, exactly.
Hopefully the listeners of the show. Sorry, go on.
That is exactly how it happens. It's like you're exhausted and you just want to continue talking. So yeah, it's been a privilege to get to tease this out. I need to sort of sort out some of the things we've been talking about and go back and listen to this podcast and see what were we really saying.
Yeah. I'm
glad we have that recording.
Yeah, me too. Everyone listening out there as well, we really appreciate you taking the time to listen to this episode today and come and hang out with us here at the ATA podcast show. It's really appreciated. And if you have enjoyed this episode and you were interested in carrying on the conversation about working with our animals in the most, whatever these words mean, positive, funnish, choice-rich ways, then as mentioned at the start of the episode, the ATA community is waiting for you. Head on over to www.animaltrainingacademy.com, click on the membership button in the main menu to learn more about what members are describing, or I'm going to say what Ava describes as having 100 behavior nerds at the breakfast table with you. There's something there for absolutely everyone. We're looking forward to having you join the tribe. That's it for this episode, though. We're going to wrap it up there. Thanks again so much for listening, everyone. From the other side of normal, you'll hear from us again soon.